Well, it's good to be with all of you online this morning. As we continue to celebrate this Easter season, we reflect on what resurrection and what new life mean for us and for our community. You know, the phrase that you were just offering to each other is something we do every Sunday. Peace be with you. It's an ancient practice and greeting that reminds us we are in community with each other in Christ through both good and difficult times. And so before we jump in, I would invite us to reflect on this question. What does peace mean for you this morning, in this season? How are you hoping to experience peace in the midst of your current circumstances? And so you can reflect on this on your own at home, or with the people around you at home, or you can offer your reflection on the live chat as well. But I'll give us a moment to consider this. Seeing your reflections captures the kind of peace that we collectively hope for in this disruptive and confusing season of our lives. And while I acknowledge that this has been a disruptive and anxiety-filled time for many of us, in some ways it has also provided moments of peace, whether it's the quieter streets or public spaces being shut down or the slower pace of life. You know, I'm sure you've seen the surreal pictures of empty landmarks around the world. You know, these images generate a strange sense of calm and peace, because they're normally packed with people and crowds. Roads and highways that are normally usually gridlocked are completely empty. Even the skies are empty of smog and pollution in places like India. And it provides a rare image of peace in our environment. But is peace simply an absence of things? Is it just an absence of anxiety, an absence of conflict, an absence of fear? It can be easy to conflate the absence of those things for an experience of true peace. You know, for me, one of my greatest needs is peace, which usually comes when I can create a space where conflict no longer exists. But during this time of social distancing and stay-at-home orders, I've come to realize that a lot of times I think I'm experiencing peace, I'm actually trying to remove myself from those spaces of conflict or anxiety or fear. And as a result, I've become disconnected rather than engaged with the reality of what's happening around me. And maybe our understanding of peace can be deepened when we realize that God's peace for us isn't necessarily an absence or an avoidance of those things, but peace is what carries us in and through our fears, our conflicts, and our anxieties. And in our text this morning, Jesus offers peace that doesn't create an absence of those things, but it comes right in the middle of it, and it's meant to sustain us through it. And so the question I want to explore this morning together is, what are the spaces in our lives right now where we're invited to experience peace? A peace that carries us through those spaces and not avoiding them. And so the text we'll be in is John 20, verses 19 through 29, where Jesus extends peace to his disciples in their spaces of fear, grief, confusion, and pain. And so we start in verse 19. When it was evening on that day, the first day of the week, and the doors of the house where the disciples had met were locked for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and his side. Then the disciples rejoiced when they saw the Lord. Jesus said to them again, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I send you." And so this interaction takes place after Jesus has been crucified. And now there are rumors that he's been resurrected. And we get a snapshot of the state of mind that the disciples are in. They're all stuck at home with the doors locked because they're experiencing fear and anxiety. It feels similar to how we might be experiencing our time stuck in our homes. For the disciples, they had just witnessed the death of their friend and mentor. They were afraid that the religious leaders were now coming after them. And it's under these circumstances of fear, anxiety, and confusion and grief that Jesus appears to them and offers them peace. And not just a phrase, but it's an embodied peace. Peace be with you. I'm physically here for you to hear me and to see me. I'm offering peace in a tangible way. And so for us, just like the disciples experienced, maybe it's an embodied peace that helps us move through our fears. And so for all the greenhouse kids that are joining us this morning, we're glad that you're with us. And I'm going to invite Kelly Cutberth and Amelia to share some of their thoughts around what it's like to experience fear and peace. So welcome, Kelly and Amelia.
Good morning, friends. It's so good for us to be with you today. We are happy to be together virtually. And Amelia and I have been talking about our story this morning, and it made us think of a time when we were scared like the disciples. I wonder if you can remember a time you were scared recently. Maybe it's right now. Maybe it was last week or last month. But go ahead and think of a moment when you were afraid. And you can maybe tell someone in your house, or you can whisper it to yourself. Do you have a moment that you were afraid? Can you remember it? When I asked Amelia to think of a time she was scared, what did you say? She told me that she felt scared during the thunderstorm we had a week or so ago. Maybe some of you living in Austin remember we had a few really big rainstorms recently, and there was thunder and lightning, and in our house it rained so much that we almost had water coming in through our garage. And then we had another storm right after that, and it turned off all the lights in our house. We lost electricity. Our TV turned off. We couldn't charge anything. And it was kind of scary. And I asked Amelia what she did to feel better when the storm was going on. What made her feel peace? And she told me that she snuggled with something soft. This is Amelia's blankie. And when it was storming outside, she held onto it and she snuggled with it, and it made her feel better. And for me, when the electricity went out in our house, I lit some candles and I put them around, and the light from the candles made me feel better when our house was dark. It kind of made me feel peaceful. In our story today, Jesus's friends were scared like we were. They were in their house and they were afraid to go out. They were afraid of what might come in, and they felt scared. And Jesus came right into the room with them and he said, "Peace be with you." He let them hear his voice. And then he let them touch or see the wounds on his hands and his side. He was saying, "It's really me." He let them see him and know that it was him they were really seeing. I've noticed that these things that brought peace to me and Amelia and to the disciples, they all had to do with our five senses. Do you know what your five senses are? Touch. You know, Amelia? Touch, sight, smell, hearing, and taste. And like Amelia felt the softness of her blankie, and I saw the light of my candle. Jesus' friends saw Jesus, and they saw the wounds in his hands and his side, and they heard his voice with their ears. I think that we feel fear with our whole bodies, with all of our senses, right? When we're scared, we can see it, touch it, feel it. So maybe that's why when we look for peace, we also feel peace with our senses too. Maybe for some of you, it's the comforting sound of your mom's voice, or the taste of a cup of tea, the smell of your favorite cookies in the oven, or the touch of a blanket, the sight of the sun shining outside. When we use our senses, we can feel the peace of Jesus in our bodies, and it can help us feel less afraid. And we can also help others feel less afraid too. It's kind of like in our story, when Jesus says, "Peace be with you," he also says, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." He sends them to go share what he's given them. And I remember when it was storming at our house, and Amelia had felt afraid herself when she got Clara, her little sister, from her room. She brought Clara's favorite blankie and some of her stuffed animals. And it seemed like when she was helping Clara feel less afraid by bringing her something to snuggle with, it made Amelia feel less afraid. And so I wonder if the next time you feel afraid, maybe when the grown-ups in your house are talking about something scary, or if you're a grown-up, maybe when you're reading a story on the news or in social media that kind of makes you feel afraid, when you're watching a movie that's scary, maybe if there's another storm, you're trying something new that makes you feel afraid, think about your five senses. So this week as a practice, I invite you to notice what you need to touch, see, smell, hear, and taste in order to feel peace. And think about how you can share that peace with someone else. Peace be with you.
Thank you, Kelly and Amelia. And just for that practice, I mean, it's such a tangible way to consider how our senses shape how we experience fear, and to invite ourselves to use those same senses to experience an embodied peace. And then we continue in verse 24. But Thomas, who was called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. Maybe he was practicing safe social distancing, or maybe he was the designated curbside grocery pickup person that day. Whatever the case, he wasn't there. And so the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands, and put my finger in the mark of the nails, and my hand in his side, I will not believe." And so this is the unfortunate origin story of how he became known as Doubting Thomas. And to be fair, he doesn't deserve all the shame that he gets for expressing his authentic feelings and struggles. Because if we're honest, all of us would have had some version of disbelief if we were in his shoes. Whether it was disbelief that Jesus could be alive again, or whether it was disbelief at his friends for what they were claiming, or maybe even disbelief that Jesus would have allowed himself to be crucified in the first place. But seeing Jesus again seemed implausible to him in the middle of all this loss, grief, and fear. And for us, maybe disbelief is what can create space for us to experience peace in ways we might not have considered before. And so I'm going to invite John and Katie Brewster to share their experience around what it feels like to be in a space of disbelief, especially in the context of what's happening in their lives and in our current world. So welcome, John and Katie.
Hi, everybody. Wei asked us to reflect a little bit on this story of Thomas. And I found that I identified a lot with his response. I was raised in a space where disbelief was often seen as a problem to be fixed or a person to be convinced, as a lack of faith. And I think Jesus may respond to those things differently. In reflecting, I also realized that I sometimes have the tendency to disbelieve that something good is happening in my life or can happen. And when we were considering this passage and thinking about some of our own experiences over the last few months, we found out several years ago that we were pregnant, and Katie had a miscarriage, which was really hard for both of us. And then about 8 months ago, we found out that she was pregnant again. And almost immediately, it didn't feel real to me. My response was pretty similar to what Thomas said in this passage. Basically, I'll believe it when I can hold the baby. And over the last few months, you know, things got better. I got to, you know, believing, obviously knowing that it was real. But even some of the things over the last few months with the pandemic kind of caused some of that disbelief to creep back in. You know, thinking about whether Katie was going to be okay, going to a hospital where one floor is maternity and one floor is, you know, response to the virus. So I think I understood a little more of the struggle. Another thing that theologians considered here is that Thomas may not have struggled believing that Jesus was alive. He may have seen Jesus or had friends that had seen Jesus in person, but then he may have questioned whether Jesus really died in the first place. So his response wanting to actually see physically that it was real is something that they consider. So for me, I think I have to remind myself that I am allowed to be confused. I'm allowed to struggle. I don't have to be somewhere I'm not or deny what I'm thinking or feeling, and that Jesus is big enough to handle that.
When John first told me he was considering talking about our pregnancy for this homily and asked if I felt comfortable with participating with him, I was hesitant. But then Wei shared the homily prompt with us, and I realized I actually had a lot to say about this. So about a month ago, when I first realized I would likely be giving birth during the COVID outbreak, I struggled and began to reconsider our birth plan. I called my doctor in the hospital. I talked to friends, coworkers. I had so many questions. I read every article about pregnancy and COVID that I could find. Throughout this process, there was this tiny voice in the back of my head that kept repeating, "There's nowhere safe for you and your baby." Some days that voice was really loud. Other days it was quieter, but it was always there. After several weeks of searching for the right answer, the safest solution for our family, I realized there wasn't one. No expert could tell me the right answer. I couldn't research enough or work hard enough to figure it out. You might think this is when the voice, the one that said I wasn't safe, got really loud. But this is actually when it started to go away altogether. Eventually, through the process of trying to create my own peace, I realized I couldn't do it. It was only then that I considered trusting God with my doubt. And when I say that I'm trusting God, I don't mean I'm trusting God to give us the outcome that we want. I think in the faith tradition I grew up in, when my faith was maybe less mature, when I said, or someone close to me said, they were trusting God, that meant they were trusting God to deliver the outcome that they wanted. Good meant my own limited understanding of good. Blessing meant my own limited understanding of blessing. I don't think I trust God that way anymore. Much like Thomas, I'll trust God to give us a healthy baby when we have a healthy baby. I wish I could say more than that, but that's where I'm at right now. Instead, what I've been trusting in these past weeks is the deep, unfathomable, incomprehensible love of God. This love delivers healthy, strong babies, but it also delivers stillborn and sick babies. This love sends rain on the just and the unjust. It causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good. I can't pretend to understand it, but this love doesn't require me to understand it or control it, to ask it a bunch of questions and figure it out. It only requires me to surrender into it. And it's in the surrender to my disbelief and discomfort that I found peace. I know John and I aren't the only ones experiencing new stresses and doubts during this time. Some of us are experiencing financial insecurity. Some are worried about their health, of their family, themselves, and their loved ones. Others of us are experiencing loneliness in new and profound ways. Can we trust that we're being carried by a God that knows and understands our journey in ways that we can't? Can we surrender into an incomprehensible love? I wonder if embracing our doubts and disbelief may allow us to experience a new kind of peace this season. Not the peace that comes when times are good and easy and everyone is happy and healthy. Not the kind of peace that depends on our own understanding and control. But maybe we may truly begin to understand the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. May we consider and even be open to experiencing peace as we wrestle together with our confusion and disbelief. And maybe we'll find that Jesus is there with us, not taking away that anxiety and our doubt, but carrying it with us. So Vox, peace be with you.
Thank you, John and Katie, just for your vulnerability and sharing from your own journey in the midst of this season of uncertainty, and for inviting us to be able to both acknowledge our disbelief while also creating space for the mystery of God's peace that we can't fully understand. And then we close in verse 26. A week later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." And Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." And so now it's been a week after Jesus first appeared to all the disciples except for Thomas. And it's interesting that they're still holed up at home, waiting things out, probably still just as confused and probably still in fear. And for Thomas, he probably feels alone at this point. He hasn't had the same experience that the rest of his friends have had. He's wrestling with disbelief and hope in his mind. But Jesus appears again, and this time he chooses to meet Thomas where he is. Earlier, we saw that Thomas was very specific in naming his needs around his disbelief. And Jesus responds by using his own wounds and scars as a way to move Thomas towards healing in his own journey. And for us, maybe wounds are meant to be a reminder that we're being invited into a new and different experience of peace and healing. And so I'm going to invite Liz Scapel to share some of her thoughts around Thomas's interaction with the wounds of Jesus, as well as the wounds of our own loss and pain. So welcome, Liz.
Thanks, Wei. Good morning, friends. So good to be with you this morning. So I've been here at my house alone for the past month or so. I guess not completely alone. I am here with my dog. And I imagine he will look back on this time with a lot of nostalgia and really good feels, because I think this is probably the greatest weeks of his life when I am here with him 24/7. And for me, there has also been this sort of nostalgic element of, you know, being home alone and remembering good memories from times gone by, rediscovering old shows I haven't seen for 20 years. You know, I've seen people post on rediscovering Disney movies, Aladdin. I've been making a lot of banana bread that I haven't done in a really long time. And I think there is comfort in thinking about, you know, these good memories from life, from a more stable time, a life before all of this. And on days that feel more emotionally heavy, I do wonder what getting back to normal will actually be like. If the world as we've known it up until this time will ever truly be the same. And it's been helpful to name and talk about what we are grieving. Last week, I was supposed to be in Florida to surprise my mom for her 70th birthday. Soon I was to celebrate with my oldest niece, her graduation from high school, and we were going to take a big trip together to celebrate. And to heal, we will need to feel the pain of these losses, the pain of these big event changes in our lives. And right now, as we're experiencing this, I think it can also trigger our thoughts and grief over other losses and wounds we've experienced in our lives. And at times that can feel lonely. In our passage, Thomas is at first far from a place of peace. He's grieving the death of his best friend and the loss of a dream. It was a complete and abrupt change of plans, and it fell super short, I imagine, of his expectations. And it's accompanied with a lot of fear and a lot of pain. And I imagine what he is grieving is a life that he knew before the cross, embracing himself for the unknown and the anxieties of anticipating what life will be after what happened on the cross. You know, many of us have experienced these visceral moments where we've received terrible and sudden news, and in ways those moments divide in our minds and lives as we knew our lives before the event and after the event. Not long after I moved to Austin a number of years ago, I received a terrible phone call from Austin Police Department that my roommate had passed away the night before. And what was all-consuming in those first moments and those first days was this frantic energy and desire to just want to return to the days before, the weeks before, and being obsessed with thoughts of what I could have done differently. Could I have stopped what happened? And it's an overwhelming and helpless feeling to just want to go back. And in our story, when Thomas hears from his friends that Jesus is actually alive, the only way he will believe that Jesus is alive is to see evidence of the pain that was inflicted on his body, to see the wounds on his hands and feet. And I wonder, though, if in the moment where he actually saw the wounds on his hands and feet and his side, if there was a moment of regret, if there was a moment of being disappointed of, you know, I wish Jesus would have returned with the body he had before the crisis and before the cross, before the violence inflicted on his body. Maybe he would have preferred to see Jesus transformed back into what he was before the crisis. And yet Jesus appears with his wounds on his hands and feet, a gash still in his side, and invites Thomas to put his hand where there was pain, to see, to feel, to remember what had happened, to be witness to that place of pain and violence, the place and source of healing. And Jesus says, "Do not be afraid. Peace be with you." You know, this week I listened to an interview Brené Brown did with David Kessler. And David Kessler worked closely with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who you may be familiar with, authored The Five Stages of Dying: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And in the podcast, he tells Brené Brown about the developments and sort of realization of this sixth stage in grief and loss, which is finding meaning. And this finding meaning doesn't take away the pain or experience of any of the other stages. But over the long term, he says it can help us land a bit softer. It can be like a cushion. And over time, there is healing, that this wound will become a scar. And those memories and experiences might find new meaning. They may change us. They may turn the page and continue our story. And in that moment with Jesus, I'm not sure Thomas could truly grasp the meaning of his wounds. I imagine him reaching out with his hands and putting them on Jesus. Jesus was healed, but was Thomas wondering if it was a return to the original plan? Was life back on track as he knew it a month ago? Or did it mean something new? Was this turning the page? And you and I know this morning more of the story that followed. We know that from that moment on, Thomas carries forward the story of not only the death of Christ, but the life of Christ. And it equips us to say to one another, do not be afraid. Peace be with you. You know, my roommate, Susan, there is much more to her life and the meaning of her story than her death. She was an amazing mother, had a contagious laugh, and she was obsessed with making oatmeal every morning. She watered her plants every day. She loved to do long distance running around the lake. And I'm not grateful for her death. There's pain there, but I am grateful for her life. And I think from that place, I stumbled on the invitation towards healing. And I'm grateful I can carry the memory of her forward. It's become part of my story. And I'm hopeful that during these strange times of isolation, of personal loss, and managing this global crisis together, we may come to find peace and healing. And I'd just like to end my time by sharing this reflection by Otelma. And I said to him, are there answers to all of this? And he said, the answer is in a story, and the story is being told. And I said, but there is so much pain. And he answered, pain will happen. Then I said, will I ever find meaning? And he said, you will find meaning where you give meaning. The answer is in story, and the story isn't finished. So my prayer for us, Fox, is that we will continue moving forward to feel pain in these times of loss, to find the invitation towards peace and healing, and live this unfinished story together. Peace be with you.
Thanks, Liz, for those beautiful words of what it might look like to experience peace and healing in and through our wounds. And so as we close, if we revisit what Jesus offered his disciples when he first appeared to them, he said, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I send you. It's a reminder that Jesus embodied the peace that he's offering. And in the same way, God sent Jesus to be a tangible representation of peace to us. Jesus invites us to do the same for others, to embody peace to those who are carrying anxieties and fears and deep wounds. Peace be with you. Peace in the form of accompaniment. It's a reminder that God is with us, even in our moments of confusion and fear and pain. And as we approach the table and celebrate the Eucharist together in a moment, let me close with this prayer offered by the Corrymeela community in Ireland. Jesus, you shared peace around a table of anxiety, peace with the bread, peace with the wine, peace in the face of the uncertain, peace in the place of pain. May we share tables of peace in places of pain, sharing food and friendship and words and life, because you came to a fearful world and found your place around those tables. We ask all this in the love of the Father, the peace of the Son, and the accompaniment of the Spirit. Amen.